Blog Talk Radio.
This is Yasa Sagonige, a seventh-grade grandson of Samanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evening and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous, plant-based, native sacraments. Aho. You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Atawehis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius.
I'm Austin Powers. I like
Gas Mojo.
The very sexy, very sweet stone, yeah.
But you gotta have Gas Mojo, baby, yeah!
What a gas, baby, yeah!
I'm going to go back to the 60s and steal Austin Powers' Gas Mojo.
Hi folks, this is Will Bluewater speaking on behalf of GasMojo.net Engine Booster. Immediate 25% fuel savings with GasMojo.net in just 5 minutes after installation. And your grandma can do it, so you just strap it on your fuel line, folks. Some customers report much greater savings. The GasMojo.net engine booster catalytically conditions any hydrocarbon fuel, be it gasoline, propane, diesel fuel. It's not a filter, it contains no metals, magnets, or toxic substances, and uses no electricity. The GasMojo.net engine booster unit is a specially designed tube containing a completely safe proprietary media. It's a passive fuel treatment process designed to disperse hydrocarbons for better performance and mileage, and also to break down carbon and other contaminants. Unlock your fuel's hidden energy potential now with GasMojo.net. And folks, you get a 100% money-back guarantee on this. I've got one on my car. It was developed by an old friend of mine, and he's an honorable person. You got to try it, folks, and go open a bank account now for all the money you're going to save. GasMojo.net, GasMojo.net. Just do it.
Hello, everybody. This is Blue Water, and this is Prophecy Keepers Radio, coming to you from Booker County in the mysterious Missouri Ozarks in Mid-America. And our guest today is Thomas O. Mills. Thomas grew up on the Hopi Reservation. Really has an astounding story to tell. I guess originally he was from Holbrook, and his mom ran a restaurant there. And when the Hopi would come into town, she let them come in to eat. She was kind to them. So if I remember correctly, when they decided they wanted to build a cultural center, they asked his mom to get involved. And so he grew up for quite a bit of his young life being able to be taught directly by the elders. I don't want to mess the story anymore, Tom, so let me go ahead and introduce you. Go ahead and say hi to the folks.
Hello, yeah, this is Tom Mills.
Well, Tom, I guess it's been, I don't know, about a year and a half ago, you contacted me and sent me your book, which was probably one of the biggest wake-up calls I've ever had. It was certainly the most astounding bit of information that I've ever heard come out of Hopi. And so let's go ahead and just tell your story.
Well, really, my book is based on four books. The Book of the Hopi by White Bear Frederick, who was a friend of mine, who was in cahoots with Frank Waters, who was probably way ahead of his time concerning Indians. Frank Waters wrote some very good books. The Book of the Hopi is recommended reading for anyone who's interested in Indian cultures. He also wrote The Myth, The Mexican Mystique, The Colorado. All these books are very good. But the Book of the Hopi, he studied with 30 Hopi elders for over 3 years. He lived in Pumpkin Seed Point and wrote this book and talked about their myth of creation or their story of creation. It took him 3 years to put it together, and living up there back in 1963 is when he was there. There was no electricity. He lived in a regular hut, just like Indians, a rock hut, and suffered many hardships. One of the other books that I use as a reference is The Secrets of the Great Pyramid by Peter Tompkins, and his book really describes pyramids and the complexes around the pyramids in Egypt, and not so much from a pharaoh's point of view, but from just a factual point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Another book I use is Path of the Pole by Charles Haskins. He was a professor who listened to his students, and one student asked him if there was the poles of the earth had ever been in different places, and he wanted to find out and study and took core samples and actually figured out where the poles have been in the past, and that's the real business. And the last book, the newest book I read, was Messages of Sphinx by Graham Hancock and Robert Duvall. And they used computer imagery to outline what the temples in front of the pyramids, why, and you have to write questions of why, and the reason behind some of the things over in Egypt and what the murals stand for. So really, that's what my book is about. I combined my knowledge of the Hopis with those four books, and the results were what I sent you.
Well, I guess the thing that staggered me the most was that the pyramids on the Giza Plateau are, they don't have a lot of the imagery on them that's so common in the temples and other places in Egypt, and what symbols there are on the pyramids of the Giza Plateau correspond to the symbols that are most important in the Hopi religion. Isn't that correct?
That's correct.
Well, I guess I was surprised in one way and not surprised in another, because one of my teachers was Zula Brinkerhoff. Zula was a mixed blood Cherokee who was secretary for the governor of Utah for a while, and she ran Hot Springs National Monument for a while down in northern Arizona. She lived down most of her life in that St. George, you know, southern Arizona area. Lived in Salt Lake for a while, but she was adopted by David Monongi, who was keeper of the Hopi Prophecy, and one of the four or five elders that edited the Tashkwa Ikati newsletter, which was 44 newsletters that outlined the Hopi plan of life. And I know from talking with her and with David and with Thomas Manalke, that they believe that there was a point that they migrated from, and that their white brothers migrated from, or those that left that point that later would come back and would do lighter skin. But Lula in her book, God's Chosen People of America, in the credit piece, if you open up the book and there'd be a picture of the Hopi homes at Olivi compared with the traditional homes in Jerusalem in the Middle East, and they were shockingly identical. And so the question has always been, you know, where exactly was it that the Hopi believed their point of origin was?
Well, if you look at the Book of the Hopi and Frank Waters' interpretation of their creation myth, it's pretty clear. You have to just look at where we all began, not just the Hopis or the Whites mm-hmm. or the Reds or the Blacks. Where did the Creator start? And the Hopi myth, if you follow it, it leads you to that location. It starts off by saying that there was a Creator. We didn't come from monkeys. That there was a Creator. He was looking for a place to create, and he found Earth. The only problem was it was out of balance. There was a problem. He had to solidify the land, solidify the land. He had to control the seas, and he did this by creating two twins, one to sit on each end of the Earth, the pole. You know, we call them Isis and Nefertiti, and in the murals over in Egypt, there's two twins. One has a pyramid on its head, and the other one has a bowl. Well, the myth goes on to say that he created his nephew. So that tells me the Creator wasn't alone. He had to have a sister. He had a nephew. He was looking for a place to create, and he found Earth. And he found that there was nine planets. All were gentle motion with each other. They had water and air. If you read the myth, you'll know the Hopis weren't mystified when they found out there was water on Mars, because their myth tells them there was water on Mars. Many things in the myth are real logical. Once you read it, you realize that they know a lot of things, and they're very honest people. So the Creator was looking for a place to create. He had to balance the planet before he could even put life on it. And once he did put life on it, the myth says that they couldn't speak. And I take this to believe that it means that they were like the apes or monkeys. If you put monkeys here first to see if they could survive, or something close to them. And if you look at the murals of Egypt, you see that represented. There's always monkeys located in the mural. And the first world, the monkeys couldn't talk, but all the people lived with the animals, and everything was in harmony. There was still a problem, and the first world was destroyed by fire. The Creator came back. He left his nephew, Spider Woman, and a woman, a female, and they were left here on Earth to populate the planet. So, where did they leave them? Well, the myth states that he left his plan on Earth, what his plan was. The nephew had to leave that on Earth for us to see. And I believe this is the arrangement of the pyramids on the Gaza Plateau, the plateau. You have one for the nephew, one for the Creator, one for that represents this Earth. You have three for the Earth to come, and three of the Earths that are gone. Those are the satellite pyramids. And if you look at the position of those sets of pyramids, you can see that they're in a clockwise direction, or the direction the Earth goes around the Sun. So, I believe that the Hopis, their myth of creation, if you follow it all the way through to conclusion, it leads you back to the pyramid complex. So, am I making myself clear, or am I going too fast?
No, you're doing just fine. You're doing just fine. So there's eight pyramids on the Giza Plateau, correct?
There's the nine.
Nine, okay.
Yeah.
And I guess the gist of what you were saying is that we have been through four worlds now, right? And we're going into the fifth.
The fourth time the Creator has tried to populate the Earth. That was his plan. He's trying to get us where we understand the problem. And so far we haven't followed his method.
I guess the shocker, and here it comes, folks. The shocker was, now everybody knows and has heard Native American people and indigenous people talk about balance. But what you're about to find out is that when they speak of balance, they really mean balance. It's not some, what you're saying in your book is that the purpose for pyramids and that they were purposely put in a certain place in order to balance this planet.
I believe that, because they're all on the 30th latitude. All of your large pyramids are on the 30th latitude. Now you find out that there's some in China. There's over 100 in China that were in this forbidden zone that nobody's ever even taken pictures of until recently. And there's pyramids in Mexico. But the only thing they have in common is they're on the 30th latitude. For some reason. Now, there's a reason people do things, and I believe that it has to do with balance. Many of the murals of Egypt show balance. They all have to do with balance.
Scale. Mm-hmm. Well, it makes sense because everybody's been around a tire shop and they'll notice that the tire tech will he'll remove the old tire from the wheel and he'll put the new tire on and, Then it used to be they actually use a level. They put the tire
they
place wheel weights in certain places in order to get that bubble plumb. Nowadays they do it dynamically.
They have to spin balance.
Have to spin balance, and that's what they do nowadays. They didn't used to do that, This was. I was so astounded when I read your book, and then in another way, so not surprised. But the difficult thing is, and the message of your book is that until we learn to literally balance our planet, every time the planet rolls, and it's done so several times now, it completely knocks us back to the dirt, and the race is on for us to develop our civilization again, develop our sciences and arts, and get to the point where we understand that the earth is out of balance, and then have time to do something about it.
And each time the creator comes back and rebuilds the pyramids, rethinks the murals, rebuilds the statues. And this is proven. If you read Tompkins' The Secrets of the Great Pyramids, all of your temples have been rebuilt over in Egypt four times.
Mm-hmm.
And they all line up with the solstice. They have to line up with the solstice each time, like Karnak and Luxor has four distinctive doorways where the solstice is measured. They can tell the days, 365. Out to four decimals, where we're supposed to be, how long a day is supposed to be. Well, those doorways have been moved four times. So, my way of thinking, if you wanted to answer questions like, what does Stonehenge mean? Well, you would have to trace it back to, like, the first time and go back to the first days of Luxor, mark the doorway out of Luxor that was the first doorway, tilt your that direction, and then put the sun on Stonehenge, and then you'll find out what Stonehenge really stands for. It was from the first time.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to reposition the earth each time. I know this sounds way out, but if the doorway we're looking at right now measures the solstice, what did the other doorway measure? I mean, they measured the solstice back then.
Mm-hmm.
So
and of course everybody knows you're a certain amount of drift.
Yeah.
I've got a background in astronomy since I was about 12 years old as an amateur astronomer. And stars drift and constellations change over a period of 50,000 years. Over the next 50,000 years, the Big Dipper, the star at the which indicates the lip of the Dipper, not the handle, but the other one. It will travel further out and will actually make the Dipper look more like a food. So, you know, over periods of thousands and hundreds of thousands of years, things change.
Oh, yeah. Well, every 72 years, the constellations move 1 degree. So if there's 360 degrees in a circle, it would take 25,920 years to go completely around a circle.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Hi, friends. This is Blue Water. Ayurvedic medicine is also called Ayurveda. It's a system of medicine that originated in India several thousand years ago. The term Ayurveda combines two Sanskrit words, Ayur, which means life, and Veda, which means science or knowledge. Ayurveda means the science of life. Ayurveda is a whole medical system which integrates and balances the body, mind, and spirit. Thus, it's considered holistic. This balance is necessary for contentment and good health. While pharmaceutical companies extract active ingredients from plants and sell them as drugs, the benefits of medicinal plants cannot be replicated because their synergistic combination of hundreds of naturally occurring phytochemicals cannot be reproduced in laboratories. This fact has been known to Ayurveda for thousands of years. The benefit comes from using the whole plant, not just the isolated ingredient. Because they contain whole herbs and fruits, Ayurvedic formulas are safer and more effective as opposed to Western formulations, which oftentimes have harmful side effects. We satisfy the health needs of our customers through safe, well-researched, and effective Ayurveda-based remedies using premier quality herbal extracts and sound manufacturing practices. We believe in Ayurveda so much, we're willing to offer you a 110% money-back guarantee. So be sure and visit india-herbs.us today and find out what this is all about.
And that's your grand discussion.
Yes.
So about every 3,600 years or so, we seem to have a birth and the planet rolls over and we have problems and we're back at square one or something like that,
well,
right?
I think that's what's happened in the past. That's why that would explain many things when you think about it. That when you find pyramids out in the sea, that you find roads that wind up out in the sea, that nobody knows where the road came from or where it's going, but there's roads and roads that lead out to the ocean.
Well, I know they found something under the ice down in Antarctica. And the word is that it's some kind of pavement, and there's been a lot of comings and goings of scientists in the last 6 months or a year down there. So, and you know, the Cherokee people, 1750, our people were called together by our chief, and the old migration story was told. It was a ceremonial story that was told every once in a while. And he said that we came from across the Eastern Ocean, and that we migrated here, and that we went to Mexico and came back up here, and then back to Mexico, and then came back up here again. And anciently, I understand that the Hopi and the Cherokee were called the Twin Fires. And whenever there were grand council, if anyone from these two tribes spoke up, everyone would shut up and listen. But the Hopi, their position as far as in their memory, as far as the history of the world and their prophecies is so sweeping that the lamas in Tibet, who had a prophecy that someday they would come and visit the land of the red man, but they were absolutely astounded at what these people taught right from their hearts and from their heads, and they said, "Oh well, we have lots of prophecies too. We'll have to go home and dust them off." Well, you know, if you don't read them all the time and talk about them, you're going to lose them. I'm sure that the Tibetans do have voluminous prophecies that they have from.
Well, the Hopi believe that there's really four races: the red, the white, the black, and the yellow. And we had different guardians. I believe that the murals of Egypt show this also, but we were just taught different languages, customs, religions, and we had different guardians. So right now, you know, in Mecca, they have the red man where his guardian left to have a big pilgrimage every year and go back to that site, but it's still the red man. Jewish people are just white people who have a different religion. When a black person is raised in England, he talks better English than I do. There's four races. There's not 100 different races. So,
Then
a lot of things fit.
That's right.
Together, so.
One of the Maori elders told Sopoche, who was an elder that was interviewed a few weeks ago, told her that they originated in the Mediterranean, and which makes sense because the old name for the or one of the names for the Phoenicians was the Mauru or the Maori. And today, northern Africa and the place where the Phoenicians had their capital, which was actually an autonomous part of the Roman Empire almost 2,000 years ago, was called Mauritania. And now we have Mauritanian triracial artifacts that are showing up and have been showing up for, you know, a couple hundred years in southern Illinois. So apparently the Phoenicians, who were known as red men, who stayed in their ships, came and went from here, and that would be the only way that they could account for all the cedar that was used, you know, in construction of Solomon's temple, because there literally wasn't enough cedar in the Middle East to build the temple, and copper also, a tremendous amount of copper. So apparently, and somebody drew the Piri Reis's map, which showed, what the topography of Antarctica looked like 4,500 years ago, because the ice has been on it for about 4,000 years. And but the Cherokee people say that we came from an island off of the shore of Antarctica that sunk. Not Antarctica, excuse me, off of South America that sunk. And there's always been talk of Mu and Atlantis, and a lot of people go, ha, 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 and, you know, it's all a bunch of nonsense, but I'm sorry, folks, these are indigenous memories of lands, and you can see the Bimini Road. You can see it from an airplane. You can see what looks like a pavement, you know, down in the in fairly 80 feet of water, I guess, in the Atlantic near Bimini. But I don't want to get too far afield.
Believe that the first world was destroyed by fire, and the second was destroyed by ice. There was an ice age. And that's when the pole shifted. And then the third world was destroyed by water. There was another polar shift at that time. And each time the Creator chose a few people to keep for each race and held them inside the pyramids for protection. And that's where they weathered out the storm with what the Hopis call the Ant People. And the third time, they traveled in boats made of reeds, and from an island, they followed their guardian, a spider woman took them, and they lasted on these ships and floated across the ocean for long periods of time. They never thought they were going to see land again, and they wound up following the sun, with the sunrise going east. So they landed on the western backbone of the continent. Now, they've just found the records of ruins down in Chile that are 12,500 years old, and they've changed their mind. People just didn't appear out in the middle of in New Mexico desert 11,000 years ago. This village was on the bank of the ocean on the western side of Chile. Well, that goes right along with what the Hopis have been saying forever, that they came across the ocean. Boats made of reeds. In El Nino years, when it's hotter, the Pacific Ocean, the current runs eastwardly instead of westwardly. So it is possible. I think people have done that recently. They came across the ocean just to prove that they can do it and read these boats. But that's what the Hopi myth is. So
Thor Heyerdahl did
that. And
They came two-thirds or three-quarters of the way around the world then.
Yeah, and their guardian took them north and told them where to settle. And if you look, there's a webpage, Jerry David's webpage called the Orion Zone, you'll see that the Hopis live on three mesas, first, second, third mesa. And those are lined up exactly, not possibly the same, but exactly the same as Orion's Belt. The ancient ruins of Denataki, Walnut Canyon, form the rest of the constellation of Orion. So there was a reason that the Creator and His Guardian wanted those Hopis to live where they lived. And there's a reason nobody's ever moved the Hopis. They lived there. Nobody's forced them off their land because land isn't worth anything. Nobody wants it. There's no running water. But they still survived. They lived there where nobody else wants to live, and there was a reason that they lived in that exact location, because they formed the figure of Orion. It's real obvious, and Orion isn't a constellation. Orion rises and lowers on the gradient path. The constellations move on the ecliptic path, and it takes Orion, you know, half of 25,920 years to go up and then back down again. And if you look at the murals of Egypt, you'll see Orion spearing the bull, and the destroyer there pulling the feet out from under the bull. Well, the bull is Taurus. Orion's coming up to meet the bull. When Orion's spear hits that bull, that's when the next rotation is coming. That's what the murals are all about. They show it over and over again. And it's not about pharaohs and treasures and the things we've been hearing about. If you look at the murals with an open mind, you'll see that there's a warning there for us. And that's what they're all about.
Now, you mentioned let me refer back to your book in my memory. In my memory, I see four couple, two from each race, and of course their address is Egyptian. But apparently, if you don't believe that you could survive inside a pyramid during the flood, next time you get in the bathtub, get a good sized glass, turn it upside down, and stick it down in the water and see just how much oxygen, or see how much air, remains in there. And I guess if you look at the galleries, some of the galleries, I guess, start down low in the pyramid, and you go in an upward direction, which would allow the a vacuum seal and allow people to stay in the upper part of the pyramid. And of course, there'd be a tremendous amount of room for food and so go ahead and tell us about those murals and the survival instructions and fish hooks and all that other kind of fascinating stuff that's in your book.
If you look at it with an open mind, murals are really, most of them are to teach you how to survive, like how to butcher your meat, how to fish, how to hunt, how to take care of yourself, prepare your food. They even made little statues to show you how to do these things, like bread mills. And they weren't trying to show you how they fed the builders of the pyramids. The pyramids weren't built by Egyptians. I don't believe that. If they were, why can't the Egyptians tell us how they did it?
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't it be like when somebody built the Golden Gate Bridge? You know, my grandfather built the Golden Gate Bridge. He would tell me, I did this, I did this. And I would tell my son. And what happened to the instructions? Who built, who actually built the pyramids? Well, I believe the Creator built them. And I believe that there was a Creator. And I believe his nephew was here first. And if you left your nephew here to populate the planet, wouldn't you build him the nicest pyramid and the beautifulest temples and the most elaborate furnishings, gold things? And then when he died, you'd make sure he had a beautiful coffin.
guess what, you know, if you read your book, you might think, well, you know, what would these four couples, you know, they lived a long, long time ago, and, you know, what would they need survival instructions for? And, you know, but nowadays, you know, people are pointing out that there were ancient civilizations here on Earth, and some of them were very, very high-tech. Some of them may have even surpassed our technology, and so it's entirely possible that these were a fairly high-tech people who lived in cities that really needed to know how to butcher and how to fish. And, you know, it's the same kind of situation right now that I'm doing on the Internet with the e-books I've written, because it's all information, you know, about, you know, what even if there were a disaster, or if we were invaded, or if Yellowstone exploded, and if there's some major catastrophe, you know, where would you get food, where would you get water? So, you know, in one way, I'm really not surprised that those murals were there. So go ahead and tell us more.
Well, the statues, I think, represent the four, you know, couples of the four races. You see black, yellow, red, and white statues with their little children next to them. I believe those are our great-great-great-grandfathers and mothers. And I believe that they probably, the reason they left the murals was to teach the young children, because the Hopis, right now, they dress the little children up in Hopi costumes, keep them with their long hair, and because they know the Creator won't choose old people to be the chosen ones. He'll take young people to the pure Hopi, and that'll be the young, and they'll take them to the pyramid or wherever whatever device he has for this next rotation when it comes to save them. And that's what he's looking for. So when they came out, if you had those murals, you could look at them and figure out how to butcher, how to survive for yourself. I just don't believe that they're there for pharaohs. I'm way far away from that. And when I try to tell people in Egypt about my book or what the murals mean, I just get deaf ears. Nobody listens because they don't want anything. They just can't believe that there's another purpose.
Well, I know that
there is another purpose. So
I know Robert Goswell's friend, Jamie Brinkley, personally took some inscriptions that were found in the American Southwest Desert and showed them to Zahi Hawass, who is the minister in charge of the Giza Plateau, and he absolutely, I mean, you could not talk him out of that those were Egyptian inscriptions. And this is a man that knew, because he was in charge. And then, you know, we've got...
Well, now, his logical answer to anything is that he's either covered by the sand, or the grave diggers, the robbers, having opened it up, got there before him. Well, who were these grave robbers, and where is the stuff that they stole? Well, if you believe the Hopis, they were the geologists of the third world, you know, or the second world. Those tombs have been there for a long time. Well, there was people taking them up after second world or the third world. So, you know, it's amazing to me that he come on TV and dig down 400 feet and come to this thing and there's already a hole there, and he says the robbers got here first.
Right.
So how did they get there first, and where did the stuff go? Well, it went to a museum during the last world. That's where it went. I mean, there's a reason for these things. It didn't just, you know, there was, it's so illogical sometimes. I just grit my teeth when I see some of it. It's so simple if you really think of it logically.
Well, I know Jewish rabbis, you know, and they're, I mean, they've been studying, and they know more about Genesis than Christians could possibly know. And their learned men will tell you that there are actually two creation accounts in Genesis, and it's very clear to them that there were civilizations here that were destroyed, and that another civilization was begun on top of that.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Hi, this is Will Blue Otter speaking on behalf of Native Remedies.
As the systems of the body are interrelated, proper functioning and health occurs when they are in balance and harmony, so it's important to consider taking a holistic approach to caring for your body. Provided that they are manufactured in the correct way, natural medicines can work quickly and safely to create holistic balance in the body to support systemic health, relieve ailments, and help prevent future disease. Most natural remedies do not produce negative side effects, and unlike conventional medicine, natural remedies do not just mask symptoms, but they get to the root of the problem to support health and affect healing at the same time. Most homeopathics are even safely taken by people of all ages and during pregnancy. Homeopathic medicine is actually suppressed here in the United States. Outside of this country, a large majority of medicines that are prescribed are homeopathics. Did you know that the cure for malaria was developed by the man that invented the homeopathic system? That's right. So friends, please take my advice. Visit the front page of prophecykeepers.com and click on the Native Remedies banner and find out what all the excitement's all about.
Well, the pyramids in Mexico have been rebuilt 3 times. I mean, you just have to look.
What
we should be thinking about right now, what should we be doing? I watched a story on Nova last night called the Magnetic Storm. The magnetic field of the Earth is weakening right now. And every time in our past history, when that weakens, it flips. It goes north will be south, and south will be north. The poles reverse. And they're trying to figure out when it's going to come. They were due.
That's right.
100,000 years. It's really a good program if you...
There's a lot of speculation about a lot of things right now, but the thing that the scientists are most worried about is our magnetic field. They know something's up.
And it's moving. They had to change the numbers on the runway because they can't be more than 5 degrees off of true magnetic north so the planes can land. And they've all changed, so they had to change the numbers on the runway. So it's a fact. It's not fiction. I mean, it's something that's happening right now.
Compass and declination on the compass is changing, and climate's changing. I've got some big changes here, and this is stuff that, 50 years ago when the Hopi started hollering about this stuff, they had the door slammed at the UN.
Oh, yeah, they've been telling people for years and years, more than 50 years, they've told anybody that would listen anyway, so...
Yeah, they would, but after the atomic bomb was dropped, they kind of activated them, and because they knew that was a door of ashes, which would make the steam foil and everything. So that was, they really started to really proselyte the message then, because they knew that was kind of their get going the message.
Well, if you look at the message of the Sphinx, where he outlined the murals, you can see that in front of Hykoth and Nephew's pyramid, which would be the center pyramid, the one that's exactly located on the exact center of our land masses. In front of it, we have a temple we call the mortuary temple, because they believe that's where they wrapped the pharaohs up for them to be buried in the pyramid. Of course, they've never found anybody buried in a pyramid or that they're talking about. If you look at that temple from above, you see it's a female figure, and she has a real thin waist, a big womb area, and there's a navel, a big pillar there where her navel should be. She has 4 feathers in her hair, and from her there's a shaft or a causeway that runs exactly in line with the cost. The causeway is in line with the solstice, and it goes into a male figure that doesn't have any legs or any eyes, but he's got a head and a upper body. One arm, he's only got 3 fingers, and the other arm runs into this causeway, and that's a male figure, and I believe he represents death or the third world. He can only count to 3. But if you follow the causeway into the female figure, she has a navel, and then right in front of her is the Sphinx. And in front of the Sphinx is the Sphinx temple, which if you look at it from above, it's a newborn. It's like an egg. It's a got 2 eyes, 2 legs, 2 arms, and it also has a navel, a big pillar.
tell us about the symbols, the hummingbird symbol. You know, this is the thing that really struck me, and I don't know it'll interest the audience. The correspondence between the symbols on the pyramids of the Giza Plateau and the religious symbols of the Hopi. You know, I guess the major symbol for a hummingbird.
The symbols on the plateau, you say?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you're talking over in
the Giza.
Yes. Well, most of those are clan symbols. But again, here you have lines that mark the if you follow them, they go to different stars, and could all be used for balancing the planet. But the main thing I think they used for balancing the planet was when the pyramid was halfway built. Read Secrets of the Great Pyramid by Thompson. When the pyramid was halfway built, the Grand Gallery could have been used as a platform. There's four notches, 12 of them, and you could drop down through the Grand Gallery when it was halfway complete, and you could map out the constellations as they went by. That's exactly the way we do it nowadays. But it would give you the transit of the stars, and that was where they could make the constellations. Well, they did that for a reason, and they carved them into the ceiling of Gender, which was blown out of the ceiling there and taken to Paris by Napoleon. But the reason he wanted the constellations was to line up Orion, and when we would be in this position where we're about to do our flip again, that was the message, that the constellations are going by us at 1 degree every 72 years, and Orion's going back and forth, up and down. When his spear comes up and hits the bowl, that's when we're going to have the next shift. And we're very close to that position right now. And I don't know how to explain it, but that's what my research has taught me. So,
well, I guess there are two stories about where Upapu, or the place of immersion for the Hopi Pueblo people, is. I mean, one of them is in what's now the San Luis Valley, and the other was somewhere in the Grand Canyon. And I understand back about 1906 or so that there was a river expedition in the Grand Canyon, and someone noticed a cave 700 feet above the river, and they could tell that from that dark desert varnish that gets on the red rock. And when they caught their attention, they climbed up and they found a cave opening, and I guess it was a very long shaft that went in several hundred feet that opened up into a gallery that could have held upwards of 10,000 people. But that there were, at that time they called them Oriental because they didn't understand Egyptology like they do today. But apparently there was, the government denies it today, but I understand the Smithsonian was sent in. They took all the artifacts out, took them to San Diego, put them in a boat, took them out in the middle of or took them a few miles offshore and scuttled the boat and then blew up the cave. So you know, here you have this this other connection between Egypt and Egyptian type artifacts and the Apophis story.
Well, I'm not sure if it happened, but I know if it's there, I know how you would find it. You would just map your Orion out over the Hopi village, match his belt up in his spear or his shield, and you'll see that the shield goes out over the Grand Canyon. All you have to do is plot where those stars hit on the ground of the shield, and you'd find that village, or you'd find that cave, because all of the other stars represent an ancient village. So it wouldn't be hard to find if it's there.
Hmm. I know Spain. Yeah, you've got. There are Egyptian panels in Australia that are unexplained, and there is a possibility that Well, I guess the thinking is now that that Egypt, you know, actually may have originated somewhere else and moved to what is now North Africa. But because you have Egyptian type artifacts popping up all over the world, and so you know, right now the academics are kind of puzzled about what's going on. But I know it sure got my attention.
Yeah. Well, it's really pretty simple. That they got different guardians that took them to different locations. The black man went to Africa, the white man went to Europe, the yellow man went to China, and there was different, you know, maybe we're only talking three or four people went in a certain location, but their guardian took them there and gave them instructions on what to do, and that's how different religions were started.
And that story is so close to the flood story with Ham, Shem, and Japheth. It absolutely boggles the mind. Now, who do you think the ant people were?
Well, I think they were the creator laborers. The Hopis have mudkins, they call them, that do all the singing and dancing, and they do all the labor. And I believe that that's the representation of the ant people, that they were the laborers. They were the ones that built the pyramids. They were the ones that have very small bodies and have a lot of strength. They're very smart, have big eyes, and, you know, just have to listen to the way the Hopis think, and they use things they understand to explain things they don't. So,
the
creator's labor.
You know, everybody's seen the paranormal TV shows, and I guess everybody's seen what a representation is of a gray. But you know, if the grays don't fit the description of the ant people, I don't know who would.
Well, that's a good point, and I think they just had some sightings down in Mexico today. Nobody could explain some Mexican pilots down there took photos of some objects that couldn't explain. But if the creator was worried about us, he might send the laborers back down here to take samples once in a while and find out how our water system is, what we're drinking, how we're living. You know, it's not impossible. I know he's going to come back. He's got his plans, so.
Well, I know one show that was on the Discovery Channel just this last week. It's called Touched by an Alien. And a lot of the abductees that that are being picked up, especially in the last few years, are being shown scenes of Earth changes. They're being told that there's going to be tremendous earthquakes and tsunamis. And they're also being told that very soon that we will not be viable anymore, which means we won't be able to reproduce. And, of course, this is something that the Hopis predicted, that eventually our males will stop being male. And so, there's yet another thing that the Hopis knew about, and another connection between people that are experiencing abductions, and they're being told by people that fit the description of the ant people the same thing that the ant people protected the Hopi from in previous worlds.
Yeah.
Which,
well, it's logical to me that I try to prove everything I've written, and I try to find a reason. And you know, if you just look for reasons why things are there, all of a sudden it becomes quite obvious what happens. So.
Well, I know the traditional Hopi haircut is, I guess it kind of looks like they put a big bowl on the head and cut it around, then they kind of cut a window pane, around their eyes and face, and I've seen some representations of hairstyles in ancient Egypt, and, it's very similar.
Well, the Hopis are very modest people. They don't, even the head man, the head chief of Bear Clan, you know, he performs his duty business just like everybody else. He mm-hmm. doesn't have any air of power over other people. He stays humble in all his ways. When they go to the UN and speak, it's because they believe there's a real problem and nobody's listening to them. And more people should listen to them and do some research and look into what I'm saying, because if I can figure it out, anybody can figure it out.
Well, let's digress back again and to when you were a youth and fill in some of the blanks. I know we've kind of covered an outline here, and this is an extensive subject. So I want to go back to Holbrook in your youth and just kind of give us a little story about how all this happened to you.
Well, my mom had, four or five restaurants, and when I grew up, they didn't even weren't allowed to eat in the restaurant. They would get things to go, and my mom would go out and, come on in, you think you're welcome, come in and eat. You don't have to eat in your car or your wagon. You can come in and eat inside. She'd always save the pickle jars for water and ice for them. That's just the way she was. And when they built the culture center, they wouldn't have anybody else. They came to town and told my mom that she was coming up there to run it. And, she couldn't get any help, and I wound up going up there to help her. I spent 4 years there with them, and we worked night and day for 4 years, basically. And,
what years were these?
It was 1970 to 74. And, on the weekends there'd be a dance, and I remember the first time they asked me to go to a dance, I was thinking there was going to be a band, and, the cook said, come on over, Tom, the first night of tonight, and I said, well, it'll be a very late one. When I get off here, she said, well, that's fine, that it won't start till late. So it was a night dance, and they start when Orion comes up and enters the key of the door. That's when the dance begins. The chief calls out, hey, come on down, and he's talking to his guardian, Orion, and that's when the Gina dance starts. Well, I got to first mesa, and it's a very narrow pueblo up on top of a mesa, and she told me how to get to where I was supposed to go out to Walby and down in Akiva. Well, when I was walking out there, there was hundreds of casinos all around me. I mean, there was it was just like going into another world. And, I finally found the place and got down in there. Marcella was there. I got the men have to sit on one side of Akiva and the women sit on the other. And I stayed there till 4 o'clock in the morning watching, 9 sets of casinos come down and dance for us. And it lasted all night. It was a very moving experience for me. So needless to say, I wanted to know more, and I kept going back and started going to Shimokovi and Shankovi and Shapalovi and Hotzilla. And I was welcomed. If you show respect, the dances are for you and they're for everybody. It's a funny feeling when a casino gives you an apple or an orange or sprinkles you with cornmeal, and you just feel like you're part of another world. So that's how it started. And then I started asking questions to the elders that I knew, and trying to figure out what they were talking about. What's this four worlds? What are you talking about? Four worlds. This is the world. This is what do you mean, four worlds?
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Friends, this is Will Bluewater speaking on behalf of wisefoods.org. Our native ancestors stored away lots of food in case of emergencies. Thousands of years of sad experience taught them to be prepared. The traditional Hopi stored food enough to last for 7 years. So did the early Mormons. Nowadays, everyone unwisely depends on supermarkets for their food supply, and few people know that there is only a 3-day supply of food in the American food supply chain. Now, should some disaster befall us that would cause the big trucks like I used to drive to cease delivering our food, you'd be in big trouble. It is for these reasons that my family purchased a year's supply of 3 different breakfasts and 10 delicious dinner entrees from wisefoods.org. These foods are freeze-dried right at the field where they are picked and processed, and are fresher and more nutritious than any supermarket food. You just add hot water, and they're good for 25 years being stored. A year supply from wisefoods.org fits in an area about 4.5 feet by 4 feet by 18 inches. I can literally get it all in the back seat area of my Honda Civic. If you stay at home, you won't need to go to a FEMA refugee center should some disaster happen. Did you know that David Ramsey, David Gallagher, Laura Ingram, and Michael Medved have also invested in Wise Foods? Why don't you visit wisefoods.org today and see why?
And you start talking about corn. You know, corn is such one of the mainstays of the Hopis, and we take it for granted and try to change its structure now and do things to it that we should never be doing. The creator created these things. There's a balance there also. You know, if the bugs can't eat the corn, then there's no birds to eat the bugs. Pretty soon we wipe ourselves out. Everything was perfect, and we don't need to be changing things like that. And that's
new tribe would be started. And
their guardians of the
I can understand why that would happen, because just as it was prophesied, so many Hopi people today have become, what David the Monongi and some of the other elders would describe as two hearts. People that are of one heart and one mind, but they, I hate to bring this up as an example, but Thomas Banyaki spent several years in jail during World War II to preserve the right for Hopis to not go to war, because they buried their weapons a long time ago, and everybody remembers what happened in Iraq not too long ago, and I guess it was Ms. Paestawa was killed. I know there's...
She came from Tuba City, and she's probably part of the generation that was trained in our schools, and now there is high schools out there where they don't have to leave the reservation. In the 70s, when I was there, the children were just initiated in the Katina Society, taking part in the ceremonies, and then they did go to high school, where they had to go to California or Winslow, high school kids were making, just like our kids go to college. Well, these were little high school kids going to be a freshman, and they sent up to California to an Indian school. You can imagine there was suicide rates, terrible, the drugs, the alcohol, everything. I saw many families just devastated when their children were just devastated.
Well, I know that the prophecy that the young people would begin to cut and shave all their hairs come true, because a lot of the Hopi and Navajo youth feel more accepted by the Hispanic youth, and the Hispanic youth, a lot of them in and out of gangs are just about shaving their heads. So now you've got Navajo and Hopi kids that are shaving their heads, so they fit in more with the Hispanic kids that live around them.
Well, just the red man, you have to look at it, just go back to the basics. It's red, white, yellow, and black.
That's right.
It's the same, so.
Yeah, it is. But it's,
if you read a book, she's up in Alaska, Native Alaskan, she wrote a book about the Zinnis, and how they came from Japan. And she wrote a very good book that proves that, the Zinni people aren't related to the Hopis, but they're red men, but they came from Japan. So it's all together, just where their guardians put them and where they went in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of confusing, but it's not confusing if you look at it that way.
Well, I know the Ainu people are completely different people, but they live in Hokkaido, and they're indigenous people, and they're completely different people from the 99% of the Japanese people that inhabit the islands today.
Sure.
And
so they had a different guardian. They had a different religion in the beginning.
Yeah, there's definitely definitely connections between Asia and the Northwest tribes. And but the Hopi have had an absolutely incredible migration clear around the world. And
well, we all have.
I know the Cherokees have, people kind of laugh at my people, but we've been, there have been busts and statues that have been discovered down in my country that very clearly show people that are not of Mayan origin, because they have, rather than the Mayan aquiline nose, they have kind of a ski-jump nose, an inverted nose, and, that's one of the... wild potato plant. A lot of those folks have that kind of an inverted ski jump nose, and
well, the most important thing is that we didn't evolve from monkeys. I think that's very important, and I believe it's not true. Wouldn't there be stages of monkeys in between humans and monkeys running around right now? If that was the case, I mean, where are they? How did that happen? Is that the fallacy? It's just not true. So,
yeah, there's just too much. We're beginning to and have for quite some time, you know, in vitro, test, so-called test tube babies. And, you can know for sure that the Creator knows how to do that.
Sure.
And the Urantia book, which is an interesting read, that talks about the original root race, and it actually says that came along with the four colors that we know now, that there were other colors that died out, like the orange and the green. But that book states that the way Creator did it was that, you know, for a million years, you know, monkeys were born to monkeys. Until one day, two human children were born to an ape mother. And, that would make you kind of think. You know, it didn't come right out and say, well, the Catholic people have their Immaculate Conception. They say that both Jesus and Mary were both not the product of a sexual union. Well, you know, what's the alternative? You know, the alternative.
On artificial insemination, but we can do that nowadays. But that's not to say that the Creator didn't have to send his son down later.
That's
when the world got so corrupt, when the Romans were killing everybody, and this is before that. I believe that the pyramids and murals and the temples were here before Jesus. You know, I think they were there a long time before that.
Oh yeah, the actually when at the time when the authorities in Israel were trying to kill all the boys of a certain age, I guess there was a couple different attempts at that to try to kill this because they knew generally the period of time that the Messiah would have been born, and
that would be a good time for him to come.
Well, just let him eat it.
Wipe out the whole, all the male boys,
and
the Creator might
have took
exception to that, you know.
And I understand, now Joseph Arimathea was a very wealthy man, and he was uncle to Jesus, and it wasn't that the Bible talks about Jesus, not having any place to lay his head, but actually, they were craftsmen. His uncle was a noblesse decurio, which meant he was a Roman citizen. He was in charge of all trade routes. And he either traveled with Jesus if Jesus fulfilled every jot and tittle of the law, he had to be married, he had to have children. So the people in Wales talk about Joseph Arimathea coming on their high-speed ships out of the pillars of Hercules and coming up to southern England to where they mined tin for 1,000 years before the birth of Christ. But Arimathea was a very wealthy man, and you can see how convenient it would be. And if you were a Roman citizen, no one would lay a hand on you. So it would have been very, very simple for Jesus and his apostles to literally travel the world in total safety and relative comfort and in a very organized manner, an efficient manner, if they had those relations. But the place for temple building and the skills were learned in Egypt. And there is thought that that after he was 12 or 13 years old, that Jesus learned a lot of things in Egypt. He may have learned healing arts, and certainly would have learned more about his father's trade.
Well, if the Hopis have this correct, and if this is the fourth world, then the pyramids would have been built at different times.
Mm-hmm.
And I think history bears that out. There's the first dynasty, second dynasty, third dynasty, whatever you want to call them, but the pyramids are of different ages and different time period. So to me, that proves the Hopi myth.
Well, I'll tell you, you've connected some dots that nobody's ever connected. And I know, one of the first things I asked you was, how come you haven't been on Art Bell, And I guess they felt that that it would be a little bit too hard to explain, you know, how all this work. But, you know, as far as I'm concerned, it's nothing more difficult to understand than what Richard Hoffman talks about every night. And
well, I don't know about Art Bell. I've never listened to him, but you know, I could explain it a lot better if I could show you the murals and show you the nephew. He's right there in the bowl, and Taurus, and you know, and Orion, and it's all right there. It's all it's repeated over and over again. And
absolutely.
In the end, when I pick up a book with Egypt's murals now, I can see where the creators get frustrated. He's tried to make it so plain for us. We've gone off on this fairyland thing about pharaohs, and it's a shame that nobody's listening. So we've all been so specialized. You know, there's people that are astronomers. Now they only have one view, and then there's the Egypt people that they only have one view, and nobody's taking the whole view. Nobody's looking at the big picture. I mean, nobody's looking at it as a whole picture. Instead, everybody's just taking little pieces of it, trying to diagnose their own special thing, and you know, it's not working. They can learn more just going up and sitting with a Hopi elder in 20 minutes than I can tell you in an hour. So
how close do you think we are for that spirit to come up and hit that bowl?
I can just barely hear you.
How close do you think we are to Orion's sphere coming up and hitting that bowl?
Well, it's when the constellations shift, and that's going to be in the year 2012, between the year 2010 and 2012. That's the same thing as the Mayan calendar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Mayans say, you know, there's nothing written in stone about that 2012 date. The guest next week, Don Jaime Perez has done translation work for some of the Mayan elders, and has attended some very important meetings during the Cinco de Mayo week in Mexico City. He'll be on the Saturday after you are, and but they you know, they say that there's another prophecy that's of a date preceding, you know, 2012, and then there's a little bit of flop in there, and it actually could happen just about any time.
Well, I know it didn't happen in, I mean, the constellations didn't shift in 2000.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't the day that, you know, Sagittarius went to Pisces, or it didn't happen. That was our calendar. And we might have shot off a few firecrackers and had a big whoopsie-doo, but that's not when they shifted. So.
Well, the Tibetan Kalachara and the Hindu ancient calendar and what the Hopi talk about and the Mayans, they're all pointing to this period after 2000, you know, anywhere between 10 to 30 years after it, and something is definitely up. Now we've got, are you aware of all the major climate changes that are going on because the Gulf Stream is shutting down in the Atlantic Ocean?
Well, the poles are melting. That's one thing the myth tells us to watch, is the poles. And the North Pole's going to be completely gone in another 20 years.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
Hi, friends. This is Blue Water. Ayurvedic medicine is also called Ayurveda. It's a system of medicine that originated in India several thousand years ago. The term Ayurveda combines two Sanskrit words, Ayur, which means life, and Veda, which means science or knowledge. Ayurveda means the science of life. Ayurveda is a whole medical system which integrates and balances the body, mind, and spirit. Thus, it's considered holistic. This balance is necessary for contentment and good health. While pharmaceutical companies extract active ingredients from plants and sell them as drugs, the benefits of medicinal plants cannot be replicated because their synergistic combination of hundreds of naturally occurring phytochemicals cannot be reproduced in laboratories. This fact has been known to Ayurveda for thousands of years. The benefit comes from using the whole plant, not just the isolated ingredient. Because they contain whole herbs and fruits, Ayurvedic formulas are safer and more effective as opposed to Western formulations, which oftentimes have harmful side effects. We satisfy the health needs of our customers through safe, well-researched, and effective Ayurveda-based remedies using premier quality herbal extracts and sound manufacturing practices. We believe in Ayurveda so much, we're willing to offer you a 110% money-back guarantee. So be sure and visit india-herbs.us today and find out what this is all about.
Well, somebody called in. That's right. See, people that are overflying the North Pole are being told to shut their windows. And one guy peeked out, and he noticed that you know, where there should be ice is a lot of water. So,
well, if you lived in Florida, you know, it's only a foot above sea level. New Orleans is under the sea level,
mm-hmm.
right? And here we can have the oceans are going to be rising. So, you know, it's a dangerous thing.
Oh, and yes, I know Clifford, one of Clifford Alford's friends rappelled down into the Ross ice shelf down in Antarctica, and this is a piece of ice, you know, 1,500 feet thick, and you know, probably about the size of a, you know, one of our United States. And they said that the reason why they went down inside the glacier was because of the change in the weather. There's been a lot of rain down there. And they said that there is a warm water bubble in the middle of that glacier. Well, you know, if that glacier lets go and cracks and you know, goes in the ocean down there, well, it's going to cause huge tsunamis. And I understand that if it did completely melt, that the it would raise the water level of the oceans all over the world over 100 feet. So, you know, we're talking about some major changes here, and so...
How would that affect the balance? See, that's the question you have to ask.
Exactly.
How would that affect the balance of the Earth?
Well, it would redistribute all that waste around the globe rather than at the poles, so something would have to give.
And I'm not, you know, an expert on any of this or anything, but I know what the murals tell me, and I've talked to some people, they say that there's an equatorial bulge on the Earth that acts as a gyro that keeps us balance, and it would take a huge impact of something to shift that, to shift it. But I know when I spin a top, when it slows down,
mm-hmm.
it topples over and, you know, it rotates. So,
that's right.
It doesn't matter how big the bulge is in the middle, if the speed slows down, if there are heat up, hot things expand and slow down, cool things contract and speed up. So, maybe I'm wrong, but the I know I've got the murals and the Hopis behind me
in
what I'm saying. So
I guess the Hopis have commented that they've actually seen, three or four times that the Earth has, you know, risen in the east and set in the west, and then there was a day of darkness, or, you know,
several days. And it was just two times. The
mm-hmm.
first time when fire didn't rotate, but the second time when the ice had been, and the third time when the water had been. So...
So they know about at least two pole shifts.
Yes.
And
their elders taught them about it. They passed it down from generation to generation. I mean, it's not a new thing to them. I mean, it's not a, you know, they talk about it like it just happened. So
if the rotation of the Earth slowed down, it would slow down very, very slowly until it completely stopped, and then you know, for a period of maybe several days, it would be, you know, completely stopped, and so you'd have, you know, 3 days of day on one side and 3 days of dark on the other side, and then it would begin to rotate the opposite direction.
And then what might we do? We might rush to build a pyramid up.
Oh.
That might be what the people in the third world did. That's why the latest pyramids are so disarranged and not completed, and the joints didn't match up, and Egyptologists tell you, well, for some reason, these newer pyramids, they forgot how to build pyramids, and they can't figure out why. Well, if they rush to build them, and it's too late, what's going to happen? They're not going to be effective. So, you know, you have the reason that the pyramid, that the Nefi's pyramid gives you the pi, and when you look at the size of that pyramid, mathematically, you come up with pi.
The pi ratio.
And pi is how you square a circle.
Right.
So they were trying to give us a clue on how to place the next pyramid. The pyramid itself is trying to
causing a major problem. And not to, I guess earlier this year, you know, there was a solar storm that knocked out several satellites, and it kind of brushed Earth. It wasn't very serious, but this kind of thing could happen again. And there's a distinct possibility that there's more to weather than just rain and hail. You know, there's also the solar winds and electromagnetic storms and all these things. They're worried about the magnetic field of Earth, and if something were to happen and that went down, that would completely disrupt electrical systems, certainly the internet. And if the internet went down, there would go the banking systems, would literally wreck the economy of the world in a 24-hour period, and everybody would...
They say it's happened 3 or 4 times. They can judge back 200,000 years ago. They just figure it's 200,000 years apart is what they're... And if you read past the pole, you'll find out that's where he got his measurements, was from the magnetic fields and lava flows. And he just went back 100,000 years, and you can plot exactly, between 75,000, there was one, 50,000, mm-hmm. 25,000 years apart, 25,000, there was an ice age, and then the third one came early, but the Hopi said that happened about 12,500 when there was a flood, and now we're in our present climate. So it's a predictable pattern, and right there in the path of the pole is by Charles Haskins.
And ice cores. You know, in leg bottom cores is what they use to prove, what ruined the Mayan civilization, and it was a drought. And ice cores have shown, I guess it was about 35,000 years ago, a tremendous explosion similar to what happened in Yellowstone, probably even further back, caused a situation on the planet where there was only about 10,000 people left on the planet. Because they knew from the DNA record that something happened during this period of time, and then later on, when the DNA scientists got together with the climatologists, they figured, oh, that's why.
Niagara Falls, its present location, it got there 12,500 years ago. So a huge amount of water flows over Niagara Falls, and that's why it's there. The Grand Canyon, if we're to believe that it actually lifted up in this little Colorado River, carved this big canyon, wouldn't there be a big delta out in the ocean where all the dirt went?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's no delta. So where did all the dirt go? I mean, there was a massive amount of water flowed through there. The Colorado River is the remains of that. The land didn't rise up and this little river cut the Grand Canyon. They come up with these things, and they're searching for the truth, but they're not listening. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So you just have to try to put it all together. And but anyway, if anybody'd like my book, I've got a few left, and they could email me. My email address is emails1870@aol.com, and I'll send you one for free. I've got about 100 left. That's about the best I can do. I'm trying to get the word out. And,
I've had a link in a copy of your book, the cover on the website since February. I've been trying to get you on, and it took this long because I lined up some people and promised them dates before you. And I guess there's no accident. And and maybe publish an electronic version of your book, and make it something that I can talk about to make it a lot easier to.
Sure.
But Thomas, I really appreciate you coming on.
I hope I didn't make it too confusing. It's hard over the phone, but I did the best I could. And,
no, I think you did a good job.
I'm trying not to let my Hopi friends down. So.
I think you did an excellent job, and this is something that people need to know about. And that's one of the reasons why we're here. Well, folks, this has been another another episode of the ongoing story of Prophecy Keepers. And, Thomas, thank you very much.
Well, you're welcome. You have a good night.
And,
happy day.
And bye, folks.
Bye-bye.
This is Yasa Sago, a seventh grade grandson of Sawanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evening and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous, plant-based, native sacraments. Aho. Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases.
I'm Austin Powers. I like Gas Mojo. They're very sexy and very switched on, yeah.
But you gotta have Gas Mojo, baby. Yeah!
What a gas, baby. Yeah!
I'm going to go back to the 60s and steal Austin Powers' Gas Mojo.
Hi, folks. This is Will Blueotter speaking on behalf of GasMojo.net Engine Booster. Immediate 25% fuel savings with GasMojo.net in just 5 minutes after installation. And your grandma can do it, so you just strap it on your fuel line, folks. Some customers report much greater savings. The GasMojo.net Engine Booster catalytically conditions any hydrocarbon fuel, be it gasoline, propane, diesel fuel. It's not a filter, it contains no metals, magnets, or toxic substances, and uses no electricity. The GasMojo.net Engine Booster unit is a specially designed tube containing a completely safe proprietary media. It's a passive fuel treatment process designed to disperse hydrocarbons for better performance and mileage, and also to break down carbon and other contaminants. Unlock your fuel's hidden energy potential now with GasMojo.net. And folks, you get a 100% money-back guarantee on this. I've got one on my car. It was developed by an old friend of mine, and he's an honorable person. You got to try it, folks, and go open a bank account now for all the money you're going to save. GasMojo.net, GasMojo.net. Just do it.
like a lover's hand upon the heart. The very breath you gave me grows intently. Wisdom, teach us what we can.